Hockey, hockey, hockey. Here we go. Welcome back to the program. Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Glad to have you aboard today. And coming up tonight, four more games. All these series, by the way, tied at twos. We have the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes. Who is public enemy number one here? Tony DeAngelo. Not exactly a surprise. Bruins may have Hampus Lindholm back tonight, which is a very welcome bit of news because they will still be without the services of Charlie McAvoy. This series tied at twos, as I mentioned. It's the Boston Bruins facing off against the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, this one was looking like it was going to be a sweep after the first two, no? That's Carolina picking up where they left off in the regular season. Regular season, they dominated the Boston Bruins. Won all three games, outscoring them, wait for it, 16-1. Patrice Bergeron, the lone goal scorer all season against the Carolina Hurricanes for the Boston Bruins. But the reunification of the perfection line and a great game four by Brad Marchand with 5 points and driving Tony DeAngelo to the point where he's throwing a stick towards the end of the game. Throwing a stick. Remember you used to do that when you first started to play hockey, like as a 7 or 8 year old? There's Tony DeAngelo. That game at 7, the Bolts and the Leafs, the Blues and the Wild, the Kings and the Oilers, all those series tied up at twos. But the Pittsburgh Penguins have a commanding 3-1 series lead over the New York Rangers, a team that kind of handled them all season long. Folks, Josh Getzoff, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, joins me now. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Never count out a team that has Sidney Crosby on it. True or false?
1,000,000% true. Really? I mean, this has been an unbelievable display from him. I think you go back to the regular season, but this series in general, he has been a man possessed. And I would say the Penguins have ridden his coattails, but I think as a change of pace from the regular season, they've actually kind of followed in line with him and produced as well as a group from top to bottom, which has spelled a lot of problems for the Rangers.
How would you describe his season? Like, you know, Crosby is going to be on a lot of the Hart Trophy ballots. He's in the conversation. I don't think he ends up winning this thing, but he's going to be, you know, a lot of like fourth vote, fifth vote person. And he's right in there with, you know, Gaudreau and Kaprizov. There's a lot of players you can make the case for Hart Trophy. How would you describe how his season went, though, Josh? You saw all of it from stem to stern.
Yeah, I think his season has been a bit of a microcosm of the, you know, the last, what, decade of his career, in the sense that the injuries derailed him in the beginning, then obviously COVID, which, you know, wasn't there a decade ago, but knocked him out of the lineup again for a little bit. But I think once he got his footing, really, in what, the first week of November, unbelievably productive for the Penguins every single night. And I mean, when he was with Jake Guentzel and Brian Rust, the three of them looked dynamic early on in the season. You know, injuries took their toll throughout the course of the season, particularly on Rust, but I felt like those three were at times looking like they were the best line in hockey with how they were producing, and they've been obviously reunited here in this series. But the season on the whole for Sidney Crosby, I think, has been Crosby-like in the sense that it has just been consistent. It's been elite, and that doesn't just talk about the production of offense. It talks about the overall game within all 200 feet for the captain. And I think it's been a situation where any doubt the Penguins had in their mind that maybe they weren't going to potentially be able to take it to another level come the Stanley Cup playoffs, they've watched their captain take it to another one and then some, and have kind of seen themselves do the same.
How much has the visual of Igor Shesterkin waving goodbye to Evgeny Malkin been played in Pittsburgh over the past few days?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. At least the players, for the most part, have not really spoken about it, and you would understand why.
Sure.
But I do think some people have started to bring it up here now. I'm not going to lie. There was probably still a bit of trepidation amongst the fans. They wanted to get in Igor Shesterkin's head, but when you go into Game 3 and it's a 1-1 series, you don't really know. Shesterkin at that point had stopped, what, 100-plus shots in the first two games?
Yeah.
So he hadn't exactly been a problem for the Rangers in the early going in the series. And, you know what, I would argue, too, that he hasn't exactly been a total problem in these past two games. There have been some redirections. The defense in front of him has been disastrous. And the Penguins, to their credit, have, you know, won a lot of 50-50 puck battles and really dominated, I thought, as far as asserting their team power over the better part of the last 4 or 5 periods in this series. So, you know, I think when it comes to that wave, it's definitely in the back of their minds. It could become a reality as soon as tomorrow night, but I don't think it's something that a lot of people are Maybe the fans are, but the team itself is not really speaking about it or acknowledging it publicly.
You know, and part of that answer there, too, probably winks at the biggest question here is how. How have the Penguins been able to do this? I know that what happens in the regular season, you know, you kind of throw away and say, okay, it's going to be different in the postseason. It's a totally different animal here that we're facing. Yet we look at the Carolina-Boston series, those first couple of games. It's like, well, Carolina picked up on Boston right where they left off. The Rangers kind of handled the Penguins all season long. What have the Penguins specifically, Josh, been able to do to turn this around?
Yeah, for me, it's two things. I think when you look at the Penguins and Rangers regular season, it's kind of funny how things work out. And by that, I mean, you look at last year, and the Penguins dominated the New York Islanders in the regular season. Mm. They went 6-2 against the Isles. They didn't lose at home, went 4-0. And then they come into the playoffs, and New York was able to turn the tables and win that series. And this year, the Penguins will be the first to tell you, you got to win four. And I don't think anyone feels overly ready to, you know, punch their ticket to the second round yet. But obviously you feel pretty good up 3-1. But that's two more wins than you had against these guys total in four meetings in the regular season. So I think that that's something that jumps out to me, the fact that they've been able to kind of flip the switch in a way that was flipped on them a year ago. But the biggest thing for me, and it had to happen for the Penguins to have success in the playoffs, Phil Bork and I have been talking about this on our broadcast. It's easy to say, but it wasn't a reality for the Penguins, is the depth scoring. And now you look at this series, and four games in, 10 different guys have scored a goal, 18 different players have a point. It's four games, I know, so that's a decent chunk, and one of them almost went two full games, so I understand that as well. But to me, I saw encouraging signs in those first two games that this was going to potentially happen for the Penguins, because doing something that they weren't necessarily doing against the Rangers in the first four meetings, and really as a team down the stretch, and that was just simply putting the puck on net. 8 of their 13 forwards that dressed in the first two games, because obviously Rickard Rakell left in the first game and Drew O'Connor came in the second, they had 5 or more shots on goal. So they were getting opportunities up and down their lineup. Shesterkin was really good, but it left me wondering, can he be that good the whole way through? Because the opportunities were there for the Penguins, and they've continued to be there, and I would argue they've even extrapolated here in the last couple of games, and Shesterkin hasn't been his best. But like I said, the team in front of them hasn't really been that great either, I don't think, defensively especially. So I give the Penguins a lot of credit, because as good as Crosby and his line have been, when this secondary scoring starts to pick up, that's what the Penguins have been hoping would start to become a reality, because it just makes them almost impossible to defend when you have the Malkin line going, and Kasperi Kapanen has had himself a great redemption series here over these last handful of games. Mm-hmm. I think Dan Heinen's been terrific. You know, the fourth line, if you want to call it that, with Teddy Bluger and Brian Boyle, I think have really stepped up in a big way in certain moments, particularly on the penalty kill for the Penguins as well. So they've just been able to really manage a lot without, you know, their two goaltenders, without a top six forward of Rickard Rakell, and without a top pair defenseman in Brian Dumoulin. So just when you expect that everything is about to crumble, these guys find a way, and it's kind of been the Penguin way in a sense.
You know, I'm going to get really pretentious on you here. You know, Winston Churchill had a great line when talking about the truth in wartime. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, in wartime, the truth is so precious that she must be constantly protected by a bodyguard of lies. I don't know that we're going to get the truth about Brian Dumoulin or Rickard Rakell right now, but as best as you're able to extrapolate or suspect, what's happening with these two?
Well, I would say Dumoulin is in way worse shape than Rickard Rakell, is my opinion, because we haven't seen him. Rickard Rakell actually skated for the Penguins today in no-contact fashion for the team's optional practice, but it was his first practice back with the team since being hurt in Game 1. So that bodes well. I still don't think you'll see him tomorrow night in New York, but, I mean, if this series does push to 6, that's all the way back here in Pittsburgh on Friday, and we're sitting on Tuesday right now. So, you know, that potentially bodes well for him maybe being back in the lineup at that point. I'm not too sure about Brian Dumoulin. There was obviously an injury that was sustained in Game 1. He came out during the team's optional skate before Game 2 in New York last week, skated for, I'm not exaggerating here, literally about 90 seconds, did essentially a loop around the rink, was one of the last guys to come on the ice for the skate, and he was the first guy off and has not been on the ice since, to the best of my knowledge. So I think that is that is something that definitely seems to be a more of a, as Mike Sullivan would say, week-to-week situation, even though he's deferring it as day-to-day, which I think means they just evaluate him by the day and then make the decision to evaluate him again the next day. but with Ricard Raquel, I think it's more sooner. I just don't know exactly when the timetable would be, but I think it is fair to say that the lineup the Penguins have iced these last couple games will be the lineup again in New York tomorrow night.
You know, it shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody who watches the Pittsburgh Penguins regularly, or like in your case, someone that covers the team. But what do you think that casual fans who may just be dropping into the Pittsburgh Penguins, what do you think they should know about Jake Guentzel?
Well, Mike Sullivan has called him many times this year, and I have the opportunity, Jeff, to host a biweekly radio show during the season with Mike Sullivan. So I get to pick his brain about a lot of these guys a little more in depth than he will maybe reveal in his press conferences, although I like to think Sully's a pretty well-spoken guy when asked a fair question. But in the sense of this show, I've been able to talk to him in depth about Jake Guentzel a lot. And there's a couple things with Jake is that Mike Sullivan's not hesitant to call him a superstar. And I think that that's a word that's thrown around a little bit too much in the NHL. But you have to consider the situation here with Jake Guentzel. He's got a 40-goal season again this year. It's the second time in his career. He led the Penguins in goals this year. Unless your last name is Crosby or Malkin or Chris Kunitz, that hasn't really happened over the last decade for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, I think that that's something to bear in mind as far as his production is concerned. And also, he's just been wildly productive in the postseason. Now he's up to, I think, 53 games in his Stanley Cup playoff career. He's over 30 goals. He's got a goal in every game this postseason. Basically, what I'm saying is he's consistent. He's productive, and he is elite when it comes to production at the NHL level. You know, he's the son of a coach. His father, Mike Guentzel, was an associate coach with the University of Minnesota. Actually, funny story, he was the stick boy for the team when Phil Kessel was a Golden Gopher.
So he
goes way back, and the two of them obviously won a cup together in 2017. So he was the coach's son. I think he absorbed the game in a hockey hotbed in Minnesota at a high level from a young age. He's a third-round pick. He's never really been a guy that's imposed any kind of physical stature. But production-wise, I mean, it's been unbelievable. And it's really been since day one, ironically enough, against the New York Rangers when his first two NHL shots went in against Antti Raanta before Thanksgiving back in 2016. So he's been just wildly productive in his career with the Penguins. And, you know, I think every time, especially this year when Sidney Crosby was hampered a little bit earlier in the year, people expect to say, well, no Sidney Crosby, there goes Jake Guentzel. Well, he just proved you wrong again and puts up 40 goals. So I think he's just been a really consistent and productive performer for the Penguins.
You know, one of the Guentzel's outstanding. One of the elephants in the room here, which I'm sure gets bandied about often, and here we go again, is there a sense that the Penguins are doing this knowing that this is probably the last time this group is going to be together to do it?
Oh, I think that that is a huge motivating factor for this team. I mean, the reality is that that's a very real possibility. Ron Hextall has to make some serious decisions this summer. I mean, it's not just Malkin and Letang, although that is obviously the scorecard as far as the core and keeping that together. But obviously, Brian Rust, who you and I have spoken about before, now you have Ricard Raquel in the equation. You're going to have some pending free agents like Danton Heinen and guys to make the decision on that front. Kasperi Kapanen will be an RFA. So there are a lot of decisions to be made as far as Ron Hextall and his team are concerned going into this offseason. I think that that in itself, with this group behind closed doors, could be a motivating factor. I mean, you look around PPG Paints Arena and you look around hockey in the city of Pittsburgh, and chances are if there's a moment that happened in the last 15 years, Crosby, Malkin, and Letang were involved, one of the three, if not all three of them. So I think that that is something that means a lot to the fans here, but it also means a lot to the players and those three. And I do get the sense that they're playing for a little bit, you know, obviously there's nothing more you can play for than winning a Stanley Cup, but they're playing for a little bit more on the emotional side of the three of them having this go together and understanding how important it is, especially after the shortcomings the last couple of years. But, you know, as quickly as I say that, and you know, Jeff, those would be the first three to tell you that they haven't done anything yet. They're only up 3-1 in this series.
I know.
And you know, they know very firsthand, especially since it happened to them last year, and it happened to them in the bubble with Carey Price, if you suddenly have a goaltender on the other side that does start to feel himself, you are suddenly in deep water. So I think that they'll be looking to potentially end this thing as quickly as possible, but they also understand that that fourth win's the hardest to get. So not to go all full cliche on you, but it's the reality for this team.
Okay. Like, listen, I think they're all the same too. Publicly, they'll give you the yearbook answer to all of it. You're right. I can't believe we just had an entire conversation about the Pittsburgh Penguins and didn't mention Louis Domingue once, but there we are.
I thought it was coming.
Yeah, now we're out of time. That was my next avenue of inquiry, but we'll leave that for a later date because it looks like the Penguins, Josh, even though they won't admit it, are going to be around for a while here in the postseason. Listen, pal, thanks. Always great catching up. Continued success. We'll check back soon.
All right. I'll send you up some spicy pork and broccoli, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. There he is, Josh Getzoff, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins with a 3-1 series lead over the New York Rangers. Tonight, we have the Bruins and the Hurricanes. That one is on 360 at 7 o'clock Eastern. On CBC and Sportsnet at 7:30, it is the Maple Leafs hosting the Tampa Bay Lightning Game 5 there. These are all Game 5s. Blues and Wild, 9:30 on Sportsnet 360. And then the later game tonight, the Edmonton Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings. That one at 10 o'clock Eastern. Watch it on CBC and Sportsnet as well. Hitting a break coming up in hour two. Tim Peel joins me in about half an hour's time. In the meantime, Anthony Stewart. Good to see him on the Magic Eyeball yesterday. Tour around the NHL. Around what we saw last night, starting with another command performance. Like, this was a cave-in. The Colorado Avalanche dispatching the Nashville Predators. Stewie's next on the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Tim Peel coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about plenty of officiating issues from someone who was on the ice doing it himself. Tim Peel stops by at the bottom of the hour. Anthony Stewart, meanwhile, from the NHL on Sportsnet, all over the Magic Eyeball yesterday. How are you, Stewie?
I am doing well, Jeff. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How many different things? I'm always curious about, like, sometimes when I think that my life is really busy, or sometimes when I think like I have a lot of balls in the air, I'm really juggling, I'm really hustling, I stop and I think of you and I say, you know what? I'm just going to shut up because Stewie's got about a million different things going on all at the same time and he's able to keep it all together. And I know that your wife is a secret weapon here that actually coordinates all of it. I know that as a fact now, Stewie. But what's a normal day look like for you these days?
Well, I'll start it off by saying some people do some of the things, some people do most of the things, but I do all of the things. So today, I found out last minute I have a meeting at Matt Nichols' gym. We're putting in some turf and some synthetic ice, so we had to go there and get the netting all set up. Wojtek Wolski was there, and
hey. You
know, you get caught chatting with that. Got a 1 o'clock appointment with the one and only Jeff Merrick, and then we're doing our grassroots skating. At Scotia Pond Arena today from 5:30 to 7:30. Then you got to come back and watch the Maple Leafs get a big W, as they would say, in the Toronto region, of course, only.
We will see about that latest point. Against the defending Stanley Cup champions, after all. But a couple of different things there. First of all, for those that, Matt Nichol, like, legendary, you know, strength and conditioning coach. And listen, we've had Wojtek Wolski on the program a number of different times, and he was a former first-round draft pick and great junior player, good hockey trainer as well. But I want to ask you about Matt Nichol before we get into the NHL issues right now. How is Matty doing? Because one of, A, the best people in the industry, period, and two, one of the best trainers as well.
He's actually doing really well. He's gearing up for some of the professionals to come back in. Michael Delzato was there the other day. He's back training in the gym, getting ready for a big, big season. And it's just funny how different guys come in at different times, but he just finds a way to coordinate them and give them everything that they need. And, you know, they have the top training staff, the top medical staff. So it's almost like a little mini factory when you step in there, just seeing all the moving parts and how it's just moving and the cohesion there. So he's got one of the best staffs in the league. They're there from when I say 5 in the morning till 5 at night. It's just amazing to watch. And, you know, everyone can have these exercises, the best Instagram workouts, but just how he connects next with some of the players and just what he's brought some of the players back from. Like, he brought Ray Emery back from double Bo Jackson surgery.
He did.
Wojtek Wolski from a broken neck. That's not exercising. That's connecting with the athlete, making you believe. And that was the one thing. You know, my career was sort of down and out, and he made me believe that I was an everyday NHL hockey player. So I'm forever indebted to Matty Nichol, because it's not just about the workouts. It's about him as the person. And I'm just glad and fortunate to be a part of his program any way I can.
Okay, let's talk about the one last thing about the Matt Nichol program. One question for you. Do you still hold the record for the Matt Nichol Trap Bar Challenge?
Absolutely. And they actually added like 50 pounds to it because they wouldn't let me go any higher. They're like, you cannot lift 600 pounds, so we'll just give you a 550 studio. We'll say it is a 600. So I think Tom Wilson's close. I think he hit 515. Oh, yeah? And I think Darnell Nurse a couple of years ago hit 525. But I think I have it at 550. They took 50 pounds off just to make sure my back didn't collapse like an accordion.
Any kids that you, because you, listen, you work with a lot of younger hockey players. Any kids that you train now that you see, like, ooh, you know what? Some of these records are going to get smashed here in the gym.
Yeah, there's some 14-year-olds, but I think that's sort of the focus. They want to lift heavy weights. But the one thing I could tell you, when I was doing these exercises, just my stability and my core muscles were worked on, and just those micro muscles were worked on to a T, so I wouldn't have the injury. So a lot of kids can lift those heavy weights, but they have injury problems. So right now, I think they got to control and just work on controlling their body weight on a day-to-day basis before they can lift those heavy weights. At this point, with the technology of training, there's no need to be having 600 pounds on your back like the old days.
Yeah, I mean, the training is so different now, and you look at all these athletes who long, lean muscles. Like, from the way that, you know, you and your brother Chris started working out. Now, mind you, Chris was like a football player and worked out that way. I mean, God, he was a beast. And I guess so were you, Stewie. How different is it? Like, when you look at the gym and the kids, you know, working out now, do you not look at it and go like, well, we really didn't do any of that stuff?
Yeah, it used to be a little bit transactional where you had to be in and out, you know, in the hour. But, you know, I have kids that are going to be going to his program tonight, and they're, you know, they're dead after 15, you know, 20, 25 minutes. I'm like, guys, that's just the warm-up. You're doing a dynamic warm-up. You're doing a stretch. You're doing your core exercises just as a warm-up. So majority of the workout, especially during this phase, is all just warming up and activation and injury prevention. So that's a big, big part of it. There's a lot of strong guys in the league, but a lot of them are, they have some imbalances. They have core problems. So you see these injuries. You know, you train with Matt Nichol. He can sort of find the tendencies on why you're getting hurt, and that's sort of what makes him not just a trainer, but a body scientist.
Okay, well, listen, a skill scientist is Cale Makar. Last night, the Avalanche just handing it to the Nashville Predators. I mean, I guess the Preds had a good first period, Stewie, but then after that, like, there's only so long you can tread in deep water with the Avalanche. Like, they just drag you out there and say, okay, let's see how long you can hang here. And the Avalanche are on to the second round now. Couple of things. What are your thoughts? I mean, 10 points after four games for Cale Makar. This is uncharted territory. Your thoughts on him and the skill set that he brings?
Well, it's funny, and I talked to some kids and some young players, and they're like, you know, that Cale Makar is really, really good. And I said, well, cross him off the radar of players that you want to mimic your game after or say that you model your game after, because there is only one Cale Makar. And, you know, you can just tell by the way that he moves and just the confidence with the puck and just the skating ability. He is a generational talent. And it's funny, I think it was I think he came into the league a year after Pedersen, and I was sort of trolling Colorado fans by saying, hey, you guys should have picked Pedersen. They're like, wait till you see Makar. And I literally grinned at that, and I'm eating my words probably, you know, 6 months after that. Just seeing him, the movement, the patience, the explosiveness, like, that is, you know, I always say you can train and develop, but that is a natural talent. He's a God's gift to the game. So it's great scouting and great job by Sakic identifying Makar, because this kid is going down as one of the greats. But Colorado, Sutter called it. He said, hey, this is going to be a quick 8 days, and he was right. And say what you want about Nashville, they had the injuries, they just didn't have the depth. And I heard you at the top of the hour say they were just outmanned and outgunned, and there's no shame losing to Colorado. I know it was going to be a sweep, but they gave up a bit of a fight last night, having the lead for a little bit.
Yeah. It was, listen, that's a tall order, too. Like, nobody wanted to draw the Colorado card in the first round. But, I mean, the big challenge for Colorado is, can they get past the second? Much like, and we'll get to the Maple Leafs here in a second, it's always, you know, with Toronto, can they get out of the first round? Same questions exist, you know, for the Avalanche, but about the second round. Now they'll face off against either the winner of the Minnesota Wild or the St. Louis Blues, one of those two teams. But Colorado, provided they're healthy, and they had a scare with Darcy Kemper on Saturday, provided they're healthy, this is, and this might be the toughest out in the entire NHL right now.
Yeah, but, you know, if you paid attention to a lot of the games with Colorado, and I always try to go to bed for 10:30, and I always use this analogy. My wife goes up, and I'll say, honey, I'll be up in 20 minutes, and I end up watching the whole entire game because I can't take my eyes off the screen, and just seeing the depth and the speed and the tenacity and the urgency, all those things I used to have Jacques Martin tell me to do and I didn't do. I understand what he's talking about watching this Colorado Avalanche team, and they just come at you in waves, and just different guys at different moments stepping up, and, you know, you talk about Makar, but look at Devon Toews and how great he's playing. I'm a big fan of Sam Girard and his little stick, how he gets up and down the ice. And, you know, one of the players I think is going to really knock it out of the park, I think, in the offseason is Nakushkin. Like, that guy is big, fast, strong. Could you imagine him, in some Canadian markets coming down that left side at full speed, and Burakovsky and Landeskog, and, you know, what's Kadri going to sign for all the money in the offseason? So it's just a perfect mixture and a perfect storm coming together, and it's a pleasure to watch. And, you know, as a player near the league, near the end of my career, you sort of get a little bit bitter. Watching the Colorado Avalanche makes me a hockey fan, and it's a great to watch and a pleasure to watch every
day. And you just want that style of play to be successful, right? Like, at the end of it, you want, okay, so whatever, I don't really care who wins as long as it's a fun team to watch, because as we've seen before in this league, whatever is successful one year, Stewie, every other team will try to copy it the next year. So if it's like, let's play an up-tempo, you know, last shot, you know, last goal wins kind of game, bring me that. Bring me that style of, sure. Of hockey. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Valeri Nichushkin. Game-winning goal yesterday, great play by Cale Makar, wash, rinse, repeat. Valeri Nichushkin's a fascinating guy, former first-round draft pick of the Dallas Stars, you know, an amazing pickup by Joe Sakic, general manager of the Colorado Avalanche. He has been, and now I think finally he'll appear on more Selke Trophy ballots. I had him on mine. That's a guy that's turned himself into one of the best two-way players in the game and can play just up and down your lineup, Stewie. Like, he can play first line, you know, with Nathan MacKinnon, or, you know, he can play fourth line. He'll kill penalties. Like, this is a guy that can, like, he's your Swiss Army knife, and he's high-level skill at the same time. Like, I don't think you could have enough, you know, Valeri Nichushkins on your team. What do you think?
Yeah, and you talk about sort of the unicorns in the league, and to be that big, fast, and strong, and sort of have those hands, like, that's great. But I think he's just a product of that Colorado system, and it's just developing and, excuse me, just turning guys out at a high rate here. So I know he's at 2.5 right now, but I think he's going to get a big, big bump. And, you know, funny, it's some with the Russian players that are bigger. It takes them a little bit longer to get acclimated to the league, and you saw him not really work out in Dallas, had to go back to the KHL for a couple years. But again, it's just... I love it, because you see those guys, you think they're just going to be at grinders, chip and chase, and get pucks in deep a la Ken Reed. But again, this guy just has the hands and in tight. But I just love the way he does a little inside-outside, almost like a young Rick Nash. And I know people aren't going to really like that analogy. He reminds me a little bit of that. But I just love seeing guys like the Tom Wilsons and Nakushkins just play at that speed and be able to make plays at full speed.
It's really cool. You mentioned Devon Toews there a couple of seconds ago, too. That's going to go down as another heist by Joe Sakic. It's not one that, and we all understand why the Islanders made that move and the salary cap crunch and all of it. But, man, it's hard to give up a top-pairing defenseman, and the Avalanche have him, and he's one of the best-kept secrets in the NHL. And, listen, if it weren't for Jacob Slavin in Carolina, we'd probably look at Devon Toews and say that's the best defensive defenseman in the game. Right?
I know, and I'm team eye test, you know that, but I can appreciate some of his underlining numbers, and his underlining numbers pretty, you know, paint a pretty picture and shows that, you know, he plays against the other team's top units, and he eats some major minutes in his D zone, but he's rarely there because it's quick out. So for him right now, 57 points this year, he's very underrated. I know, how you say 57 points is underrated, but just the plays that he makes. And, you know, I always use the term, one of the players that I played with, Jay Bouwmeester, he just made the right play every single time, rarely makes a mistake, is always in the lane, has a good stick, makes a tape-to-tape pass, all those little things that doesn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, but the coaches really, really appreciate that. So he does that, and he's putting up numbers. I think that's what separates him from some of the other players in the league.
Off the Colorado page onto the Patrick Marleau page. So 23 seasons in the NHL, Patrick Marleau today announces that he is retired. What a wonderful season. All-time games record, that's his. You would have competed against Patrick Marleau. Just your thoughts on the big man that could move his feet. And I was saying to Elliot in hour one, I think of 30-70. Every year he will give you 30 goals and 70 points and be a real responsible, solid player. Coaches love tapping his shoulder because you know what you're going to get out of Patrick Marleau. Patrick Marleau, Stu, he calls it a career today. Your thoughts?
Congratulations on a great career. And, you know, he was worth every single dollar and term of that contract that he signed in Toronto. And I went to San Jose's camp near the end of my career. And, you know, I was typically the first or second fastest guy in all the skate testing tests. And, you know, I remember just going in like on a full race for the puck, full ice. And I was in full speed. I was lean and mean, ready to go. And just seeing him blow past me, I think that's only happened maybe twice in my whole career, the way that he blew past me. It was maybe Malkin and then Richard Zednik. That's the only time that that's happened in my career. So just to see that speed at a guy, I think he's probably, what is it? He's probably 35 at the time, to be able to do that and just bring that pace every single night. And, you know, he's one of those guys, and I believe that the story rings true. He's the guy in between every intermission, takes care of his body, gets out his equipment, hops in the cold tub, gets dressed. And there's only 17 minutes in between each period, and you got the coach talking for 3-4 minutes. So just showed his dedication of the game and to have that Iron Man streak and play 1,800 games. And, you know, I had some teammates that, you know, they were ready to call it after 400-500 games. So to be able to play almost 1,800 games and have that enthusiasm and love for the game, that just shows what type of player and person Patrick Marleau was.
Yeah, he was such a wonderful guy to watch. Just with I always love it, to your point, like the big guys that can really move their feet. Right? Like that was one of the things that always impressed me about Lindros. And I think everybody too. Like we had seen big players that can skate before. Like Jean Béliveau was a big man that could skate and that. And he really turned heads when he first, you know, he joined the Montreal Canadiens from the Quebec Aces. But for, you know, a different generation, watching Lindros as an 18-year-old with that size be able to move his feet, like it was frightening. Like large men aren't supposed to move like that. And what was Marleau, 6'2", 6'3", 230 pounds as well himself. And, you know, that guy had wings on his skates.
A big boy, big boy to say the least. And, you know, I don't think people really have an appreciation of how big Eric Lindros is. And if you ever want a chance, you can see him at Scotia Pond. He's got his Skate Scribe company that he's endorsing. Mm-hmm. He's a big human being. So I'm happy that I think I played against him at his tail end of his career, but I'm happy that I didn't have to go into a corner with prime Eric Lindros, because I was a big boy, but there's few humans that I'm very, very intimidated by physically. That Eric Lindros is one of them.
People can get intimidated by other players. Teams can get intimidated by other teams. The Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. This series all tied up at twos. You can insert all the cliches. Oh, now it's the best 2 out of 3. The Maple Leafs have home ice again, etc. How do you see this one, Stewie? You know, it doesn't look like there's going to be much by way of lineup change other than Nylander goes down to the third line. Justin Hall stays in. There'll be no additional muscle in the lineup tonight. No Wayne Simmonds, no Kyle Clifford. Liljegren's on the outside. Justin Hall stays in the lineup. How do you look at tonight's matchup?
Well, again, I think this is the only market where, you know, everyone expects huge changes after a loss. And I know it was a pretty lopsided loss, but, you know, you're looking at, you know, Tampa Bay, you know, they, you know, the pressure's on them too to win, and they weren't really making any major changes after, you know, any of those losses too. And, you know, you're seeing Patrick Maroon have success. A lot of that is because John Cooper leaves him alone, just lets him out, goes out there, lets him play, understand he's going to make his mistakes. Sometimes he's going to cross the line physically and he's going to be chirping, but he knows that he's safe. So now he shows up and he has some big games in the playoffs. So I think with Toronto, just the uncertainty of, well, who's coming, who's going, I think that's sort of trickling down, you know, into the team here. And I think the big issue with this group is that, you know, we're sitting here not knowing what you're going to get. Right. When you see the Colorado Avalanche, you know they're going to come out hard. When you play the Dallas Stars, you know they're going to play a good two-way game and Ottinger's going to stand on his head. Calgary Flames are going to come out a certain way. So I think that's sort of the issue where it sort of confuses and frustrates the fan base, where you don't know what you're going to get. And that's sort of been the case for the last 4 or 5 years with this group. So I think you can only hope the big guns come up and step out and have a big game. Matthews needs a big game. And you can't afford to have two of the big four having a big, big night. You're looking at all the other teams. It's always an unsung hero. Someone is stepping up every single night and having a big, big game. You can't just have the regular guys step up and do it every single night. So I think for Toronto, you know, you got to have Matthews go. You got to have Marner, Tavares. You got to get Nylander there on the forecheck, backcheck, paycheck, spot check program too. So they just need a better effort. But I think the key is for them now using the home crowd as their advantage and getting the first goal. They're a different team when they have the first goal versus when they're trailing. So I think the pressure's on the Leafs. But again, they have the home ice advantage right now. They got to take advantage of the crowd and get to the net and start capitalizing on the power play and, you know, shoring up some of those details that have been lacking, for some of the series.
Was that just a Yaroslav Spacek reference?
Yeah, he used to say that every day. Forecheck, backcheck, baitcheck, spotcheck, and then he'd hop into his Bentley and drive off every single day in Colorado. Carolina, excuse me.
Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck. We've heard that one.
Spotcheck.
Add spotcheck.
And I have to thank him because I had to make meat in Carolina, and a big way of doing that was the sauna and steam room. And they shut it down for about 2 months. I don't know why the trainer said we're shutting it down. And when we traded for Spotcheck, we had a team meeting. He called everybody down. I think he called the owner down. The mascot was in there. And he told the story from when he was 5 years old in the Czech Republic and he was sick or he had illness. His mom and dad would put him in sauna. And that helped make me to the NHL, get me to the NHL. We need the sauna. Everybody in this room, if you agree, start clapping. We had a big round of applause. And let's just say he got the sauna and steam room turned back on. Yeah, it was hilarious. Thank him for that.
Why did he take it away in the first place?
I don't know. I think maybe they knew I was cheating and making weight. So I don't know. They're trying to catch me cheating. I don't know. But it was shut off for a couple months.
Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck, spot check. Oh, I love that one. Consider
the name of the podcast today.
What do they say? Greatness borrows, but genius steals.
Yep.
Consider that one stolen. Back to Austin Matthews too, really quick. You know, Kevin Bieksa, Elliot and I were talking about this in the first hour. Kevin Bieksa has been banging this drum too. Do you think the Maple Leafs might be overthinking the Austin Matthews thing, which is trying to finesse him into spots where he's going to shine instead of just saying, like, look, we're just going to lead with Austin Matthews. We're going to force feed him minutes. He's our top dog. We're going to win and lose by players like Austin Matthews. No more of this, you know, waiting for the third or fourth shift to get Austin Matthews in here. You know, given the nature of how the series is being called with the number of penalty kills that the Maple Leafs have endured, you know, could the Maple Leafs be guilty here of overthinking how to use Austin Matthews and should probably just look at it and say, he's our best player, he starts, he's going to get, as Anthony Stewart would say, all of the minutes?
Yeah, I think they're overthinking it a bit too. And I think if you put Austin Matthews against the Monstars, he's going to find a way to score a hat trick. So I think you just got to put him out there in every single situation. You don't wake up and score 60 goals and say what you want. He should have been a 50 goal scorer the last couple of years, but he's had some injuries here and there. He is an elite player. And as much as, you know, they got the Sorellis and the shutdown, I don't think he's personally worried about that. He just wants to play. And I'll take it a step further. You know, you're looking at Marner on the penalty kill there. Throw him out there. I guarantee you he's smart enough to know when to jump in a hole and go on a breakaway and do all that. So you got to find a way to get him his minutes, especially in the playoffs. And they say you got to let cookers cook. You got to let him cook a little bit more. So it's not chess right now. It's Red Rover. And just, you know, call him over and throw him out there and let him do his thing, because more times out of not, you know, he creates his own offense. He's not worried for that backdoor tap. And he's the guy that goes to the net. He's the guy that gets that tap in goal. So it's not like he needs a proper matchup. He just needs those repetitions. And you're going to see those numbers. You're going to see those results. But I understand it from a coach's perspective. You got to play a little bit of chess. But when you have a special talent, an elite talent like Austin Matthews, you just got to let him run. Let the horses run.
Let the horses run. And if you're the Edmonton Oilers tonight against the Los Angeles Kings, it is game 5 on Sportsnet earlier. It'll be the Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning later on Sportsnet, the Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings. Just let McDavid ride. Just let Dreisaitl ride. LA is kind of surprised a lot of teams here, grabbing a couple of games. From the Edmonton Oilers, you know, you always think of the line, you know, the enemy always gets a vote on your strategy. You know, you have one way you think you're going to beat the Los Angeles Kings, but don't forget there's some really good players there. And we saw Jonathan Quick in the last game remind people of that. We saw Anze Kopitar in the last game remind people of that too. How do you see game five between these two sides?
Yeah, I think if you let the horses run, I think it's going to be time for McDavid and Draisaitl to take over here. And, you know, how about that signing, of Philip Deneau? And I think as our producer, Matt Marchese, you think thought it was an awful signing, too much money. I know I'm going to get a text saying he didn't say that, but I think it was him that said that. But just look at the shutdown role that he's doing in that two-hole here.
Yeah.
And that Trevor Moore, I'm trying to think where he used to play, but he's a pretty good player as well, too, where he's stepping up and playing some good hockey. And what I like about L.A. is there's some, you know, unknowns on the East Coast, you know, the Iafallos, the Grundstroms, and, guys that are stepping up. Kempe, you know, playing some great, great hockey. And, they have some young guys in Kaliev, and, these Byfield are going to be a star. And they're doing it.
Fire the puck.
Oh, yeah. I saw all his goals last year with the Ontario Reign. This guy's going to score 20-30 in this league, too. And they're doing it all without Drew Doughty. And just imagine if he was in this series now. So, yeah. You heard him talking about, well, I don't want to be part of a rebuild. Well, I don't think they're as far as off as people think right now, especially with Jonathan Quick between the pipes making saves without a glove on. So they're a good team. I don't think it's going to be an easy series, but kudos to LA for making it a series for sure.
They really have, no Drew Doughty. And, this year, this year before, injuries derailed everything, that pair of Drew Doughty and Mikey Anderson was excellent. Like they're really good. Like they're up against some of the top pairs, whether it's, Ekblad and Uyghur, whether it's Hanifin and Anderson in Calgary. Early it was Charlie McAvoy and Matt Grizzlick. Like that combination in LA, the Devontaeves, of course, and Cale Makar, maybe the top of the bunch. But that combination of Anderson and Doughty was outstanding. And listen, Anderson is still there and driving Connor McDavid to fits.
Yeah,
like he's just we talk so much about coaches and O-line matching. It seems now we're in the era of the NHL where it's not so much line to line, but what D pair do you have out there against the other top forward unit? And Mikey Anderson has been able to get under McDavid's skin. We saw the penalty a couple of games ago. Like Mikey Anderson, see, we always look at, series like this that help distinguish players. Anderson's one. If you didn't know Mikey Anderson's name before this series, you now do. And you probably know the name Sean Durzi as well by now. Your thoughts on what we're seeing from the Kings, from some of their younger guys?
Well, it's great to see and guys rise to a challenge. And they say playoffs is usually a coming out party for some of those guys. And those guys that you mentioned, absolutely, that is for them. And to not be intimidated by the speed of, Connor McDavid, and you're sort of pacing him, but getting in his face and not worried about, sort of the repercussions. And I got laughed off the Twitter sphere when I was talking about teams, having Olimatas and the Edlers. Those are guys that are veteran guys that know how to play the game the right way, that sort of show up and play the right way, especially, in the playoffs. So it's kudos now. And I think enough respect couldn't be given to Todd McClellan and what he's sort of doing with this group, with his staff, with Trent Yanni and Marco Sturm. I think those guys have really, really did a great job, because we knew the Pacific wasn't going to be that great this year, but I don't think a lot of people pegged the LA Kings to be making the playoffs and taking the Edmonton Oilers to potentially six games.
Yeah, no, that's really true. Let's blaze through the other couple of games here really quickly, Stewie. Bruins and the Hurricanes. Listen, I got to ask you about Brad Marchand. I love him. I think he's one of the best left wingers, maybe amongst all the left wingers in the game in the last 5-10 years. This is all due respect to the Ovechkins, etc. He may be the best of the bunch. He's on my Selke ballot again, and just living between the ears of Tony DeAngelo. Your thoughts on Brad Marchand, the Boston Bruins, Carolina Hurricanes game five tonight?
There's guys that can make a travesty of the game. And again, that was one of those guys when I played, I could probably beat him up, but it's not worth the headache to even deal with the chirping. So you just let him, rat it up and you ignore him. And that's usually when you get him engaged. And that's usually when he takes over a game. So for me, he's almost like the honey badger, where you just leave the honey badger alone and they'll leave you alone, hopefully. And, for him to be that skilled and put up that many points, but then now decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to now make this game go sideways. That's a true definition of, as the kids say, a savage. So he's a savage. And, my teams that played against him, hey, just let him have his goal and assist, because if you get him engaged and you wake him up, it's usually with the big power forward, you say, let him sleep. If you don't let Brad Marchand sleep, he can put up a 4.5-point night. So I think, don't get into the war of attrition with him, because he's fully armed and you're outgunned in that department for sure.
Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues, this one all tied up at twos as well. Looks like It very much looks like Leddy and Bertuzzo are back in for the St. Louis Blues tonight. This one has been as advertised. Your thoughts on what we see tonight in Game 5. What stuck out to you from St. Louis and Minnesota, Stewie?
Well, I just want to know when if I come back as a hockey player and reincarnated, I want to come back as Kevin Fiala because I just love him. He's been one of the best players in the league the last, you know, probably 2-3 months of the season. So, you know, showing Kyrou now scoring 3 goals in the series too. So it's going to be a big, big series. And I think it's going to come down to goaltending, whoever has the edge right now. But this is going 7 games. And I just love the physicality and the heaviness and seeing Jordan Greenway getting mixed up with some of the guys out there too. So that's going 7. And I think whoever's coming out of this series is probably going to be limping into the Colorado series.
Oh, it's just in Colorado getting their business done early and now just chilling as well. You know, Fiala's a fascinating one. It's funny. I was talking to one person whose opinion I really, really respect.
I heard your rumors.
Well, there is that New Jersey one that's out. Listen, that makes a ton of sense. Here's the thing. I was talking to someone before I did all my balloting. And we're talking about the Calder, and this person said to me, you know, you might want to include Matt Boldy in all of this. And I said, I don't know that Boldy's going to have the games. And this person said, look what Matt Boldy was able to do with Kevin Fiala. And how much Fiala has really popped this year and what that's going to mean for the Minnesota Wild in the playoffs and what that's going to mean for the Minnesota Wild because, you know, they can't resign him. Like they just can't, barring like moving out major gobs of money. They just can't.
So you're saying
Kevin
Matt Dumba
Fiala.
Is getting traded? Is that what you're saying? Is that coming on?
I have.
Is that the 33rd thought of the day?
No, I've stopped saying that because Stewie, like everybody else, I've said that over the years. Like how many times have we said Matt Dumba's getting traded? Like we said it during Vegas expansion draft. Oh, clearly Minnesota, like they're gonna do something with Dumba here. Seattle draft. Oh, they're gonna do something with Dumba. No. Like the rumors have been out there for too long and it's never happened. So I'm now at the point where I'm not saying it anymore, which means it's going to happen.
No, I think he's one of those guys. And I think the Minnesota fans are sort of cringing at this. He's one of those teams where he's obviously a fan favorite, but he's a teammate favorite as well. And he just drags this team into the fight. And he brings that intensity every single shift where, yeah, he can toe drag you and go top shelf from the back end, but he can take your head off coming through the middle. So I think you have an appreciation for his game where I think he's a lifer with the Wild.
What it seems like on that, we'll wrap. Please continue to resume your busy day, Stewie. I know there's a lot of things, and please send our best to Matt and Nickel, okay?
All right, thanks a lot. Thanks, Jeff.
One of the good people in the game. There he is, Anthony Stewart, going to visit another one of the good people in the game, Matt Nickel. We'll hit a break. When we come back, we'll get on the officiating page with someone who did it for a number of years, Tim Peel, former NHL official, does some work with Daily Faceoff as well. We'll talk about the officiating in the playoffs. And as much as we talk about how officials change, players change as well. Everybody in a lot of ways in and around the game changes. How do officials adapt to that? That and other officiating issues with Tim Peel, former NHL referee, when the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back in a moment.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. 4 big games on the network this evening. It all gets underway at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 360 with the Bruins and the Hurricanes. 7:30 Eastern, the Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Minnesota and St. Louis. Game 5, 9:30. You can watch that one on Sportsnet 360. And then at 10 o'clock Eastern is the Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings. You can watch that one on Sportsnet and on CBC. Tim Peel, former NHL referee, now media everything around hockey, joins me now. Tim, how are you today?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Good. First of all, I'm really pleasantly surprised and impressed and like kind of proud of you for jumping right in with media. Like normally when officials retire, sometimes it's maybe a book and then that's about it. But you've jumped in like whole hog, like full media, whether it's digital, whether it's radio, pop on television, like everything. When you were officiating, did you always want to do this in the back of your mind, or is this like just suddenly like, okay, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, I did. I've kind of always been an open book. I don't mind putting myself out there. Sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. I think it's a bit of, you know, my childhood where, you know, I was adopted. I grew up in a trailer park. You know, I didn't come from anything. And just, you know, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career and perseverance and resiliency. And I've just always been a big believer in things happen for a reason. And I always wanted to get into broadcasting, and we'll see if it ever happens. But it's something that I enjoy. And I like letting the fans know, you know, my thoughts on different calls and basically my life, what's going on in my life right now.
Yeah, it's really great, Tim, and you're doing a great job. And, you know, as you know, my brother-in-law is an official, and I love watching hockey games with him because he always looks at it from an official's point of view, which always gives you a different dynamic and a different perspective. Do you find, though, that now, you know, in your new reality, in your new career, that you're – like, do you watch the game differently? Do you see yourself, like, watching the game as an official, or do you see yourself watching the game as more of a traditional hockey analyst? How do you see yourself watching the game, if that makes sense?
No, it does. It's a good question. A bit of both. Like, I went to the Blues game on Sunday here, and, you know, they had the ref, you suck, chant going. I looked over at my wife, and I said, that was a penalty. I go, that was the right call. But then when the Blues scored, you know, I was up cheering and with my kids and my wife. And so it's a bit of both. Like, I'll watch the games, obviously, tonight. And I watch to see how the guys are doing, and because I know there's a lot of pressure on them this time of year. Every call is magnified. And, you know, knock on wood, there really hasn't been that much controversy yet so far in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think our guys have done a good job. But no, when I watch the game, it's a bit of both for sure.
What is the most difficult call to make around playoffs for an official? Like, I'm sure there are some that are simple and obvious, but listen, all calls are judgment calls. Like, I'm sure a trip to one isn't a trip to another, and maybe this is a little bit of that. What's the most difficult call, Tim, do you think is the most difficult call in the playoffs for an official to make? Because you want the calls to really be the calls, right?
Correct. No, I think you nailed it. The trips, the hooks, the slashes, and so on, they're pretty standard. The NHL has a standard that they expect our officials to call this time of year. I'll go to the hit last night with Oshie and the Florida player.
Sam Bennett.
And in real time, I tweeted out, I said, I don't think there's a ref in the league that would call that a penalty in real time. And I've slowed it down. I've looked at it. The principal point of contact, does he get him in the head eventually? Yeah, he does. But a lot of it is Sam's glove is up and his stick is up. And I think that causes a lot of the damage. But Oshie doesn't elevate himself. And the puck's right there. But you're going to have 50% of the people that say it's a penalty, and the other 50 are going to say it's a great hit. And I was noticing comments from Twitter people, Twitter media today, saying that they thought it was a good, clean hit. Mm-hmm. And we can't take the physicality out of the game. But to answer your question is, I would say headshots are really the hardest, because in real time, I'm not calling that a penalty. Now, it's easy to slow it down frame by frame, but you can't do that in real time. Our guys have to call the infraction in real time. Yeah. And to me, I thought the officials used great judgment there in allowing that hit. And then the other one that's really tough is goalie interference. Once again, 50% of people are going to think it's a right call. The other 50 are going to think it's a wrong call. Mm-hmm. That's a tough – there's a lot of gray area, as you know, Jeff, on goalie interference. And I think the Situation Room has done a good job this year on a couple, two or three that we've had. And it could go either way. But at some point, they've got to make a decision. But it isn't just black and white. Mm-hmm. And we don't want it to be black and white. We don't want it to go back to where Brett Hull's toe was in the crease. And is that a good goal or not a good goal? You know, when we had that, we had so many goals disallowed. We still want traffic around the net. And if it's egregious, then our guys will wave it off. And if they don't wave it off, then the Situation Room will step up.
You know, one of the things that I'm always curious about, and this comes to me from, you know, conversations watching the game with my brother-in-law as well, because we're always talking about where the officials are at on the ice. You know, making the whether you make the call or don't make the call, sometimes it depends on your vantage point and where what your sight lines are. You know, How much does it vary, or is there a standard for all officials? Let's just take a call around the net. Okay, there's a scramble in front of the net. Is there one place where a referee has to be, like, standard? Like, okay, if there's a play around the net, there's this goal mouth scramble, the referee has to be here, or is it at the referee's discretion where he or she stands?
It is at the referee's discretion. The worst place you can be is have your rear end stapled to the corner boards. You know, you don't want to be stuck off in the corner. Mm-hmm. Some guys, depending on where the scramble is, they're going to get to the side of the net. Other, depending where the traffic is, they're going to get behind the net. It's our job as the down low official is to get to that net as close as you can get to make sure that you do not blow the whistle if the puck happens to be free. And that's the worst feeling in the world. You blow the whistle and then 1001, boom, they put it in the net. Mm. And so the job of the down low official is to get to the net. And then as the up high official, now he's got to watch everything in front of the crease. A lot of sticks come up, you know, during plays like that. He's got to catch the high stick. He's got to catch a cross check from behind, hook to the hands. That's the job of the up high official.
I'm curious about crew chiefs as well. Are there different crew chiefs that want officials in different positions? And do you know that, you know, going into a game, okay, you know, this chief is going to want me here. This one's going to want me there. Like, is it that, am I making this whole thing too complicated, Tim?
No. You know, I don't think you are, but that is not the case. You know, Stephen Walkham, who, you know, our director of officiating, vice president of the league, he doesn't care where you are. You could be standing on your head as long as you make the correct call. So he, you know, it boils down to you have to be a good skater now in this league in order to get good sight lines. And if you can't skate, then you're probably not going to last long in the league, just like the players. But no, there's not a, he doesn't say, you know, I want you, he doesn't want you to be a robot and this is where I want you to stand. He wants you to go wherever you need to go in order to gain the best sight line.
I want to go, you referenced the TJ Oshie hit on Sam Bennett a couple of seconds ago, and that was certainly a flashpoint moment in that game. How much do you put into the fact that Bennett turns into the hit? I mean, there's not going to be any supplemental discipline on this one. This isn't, you know, under the domain of George Parros here.
Right.
I mean, how much do you look at a situation like that and say, well, you know, did the shoulder catch the head? Yeah, but Sam Bennett turned into this thing.
Oh, I would say a lot. You know, TJ Oshie doesn't go out of his way to pick his head there. TJ Oshie is simply trying to lay a good, clean, hard body check. And as you mentioned, Sam just turns the last minute. And, you know, the onus has to be on the player. He's got his head down. It's unfortunate. As an official or a fan, you never like to see a player get hurt. But Sam's got his head down. The puck's in around his feet. And I don't know if he's really aware that TJ's coming to lay a good, hard, clean body check on him. So there's a bit of both there. But I think that the league got it right by not issuing any supplementary discipline.
What do you make of scrums these days, Tim? Like, I look at scrums and I always think back to, remember, you know, Paul Stewart told me he would pull linesmen out of scrums, like saying, boys, if you're going to fight, fight. If not, let's just go back and have a face-off here. What do you think of scrums right now? And did you ever call your linesman out of a scrum?
No, never. Unless it was two tough guys and we simply needed to, you know, a fight was going to bring down the temperature of the game and it was two tough guys that wanted to get at it. But this time of year, I think our guys have done a really good job. Bill McCreary and Don Koharski were two officials that I really looked up to. And when I worked with them on the ice and then subsequently when they became my boss, they both hated taking one guy from each team and then you played 4-on-4. Because then what happens is 3 or 4 minutes later, you get another scrum. 3 or 4 minutes later, you get another scrum. It doesn't deter the players if they know they're not going to be shorthanded to stop the scrums. And I'll give an example. It was the first game of St. Louis in Minnesota, and Kelly Sutherland and Jake Brank were doing the game. And they did a great job because they took Foligno once, they took Greenway once, they took Perron once, and they took Falk once. They all took them, they just took one player on each separate occasion. And if that doesn't get through to the coaches and the players, hey, stop the scrums, then nothing's going to, because I guarantee you at the coach at some point, Dean Evanson or Craig Berube are going to go, guys, you got to quit the scrums. Like, we cannot. And McCreary and Coho would tell me, you may not even get the right guy. You may get just the last guy you see punch, but there's a fear factor in calling just one guy, calling two guys. Now, early in the game, if it's the first scrum and two guys are really wrestling and going at it, not a problem. You, let's go to the box. Yeah. But then if it continues on, that's when you need to take one guy.
I am curious about the nature of playoffs and playoff intensity. And well, we've talked about this countless times. Elliot and I have done this on the podcast a lot of times. And in the playoffs, it's not so much the officiating that changes, but the players change. And we see it really pronounced this year. Whether it's, you know, the Svechnikov hit on Hampus Lindholm, whether it's the Ryan Lindgren hit on Rickard Rakell, like, I don't know that those hits happen on a Tuesday night in late January or the beginning of February, but they happen in the playoffs. How quickly do you notice that the game is different, Tim, when the playoffs start? Like, how quickly does the officiating crew say, whoa, okay, every shift is for keeps?
As soon as you drop the puck in the first game, you know, I remember working in the playoffs in the first round. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, just relax. When the second round comes and the third round, it becomes a little bit more positional. In the first round, as we see with Washington and Florida right now, you know, Washington was close to going up 3-1. Everybody feels that they have a chance to win in the first round. And I said it the other day, you have guys. Kevin Fiala probably doesn't throw too many hits throughout the year. He's a 30-goal scorer. Mm. And he hasn't been playing well this year in the playoffs, and there's a lot of heat on him right now. And it's, are you not playing your style of game? But there are guys that have never thrown a check for 82 games that are now finishing their check every night. And that's what makes the first round so much fun, because of the intensity.
Yeah.
And but as we see the playoffs go on, you'll see a little bit less of that.
Who do you enjoy watching? Not teams, but individual players. Who do you like watching now?
You know what? I am just watching the Pittsburgh game last night. You know, I think we've been saying on the radio or TV for the last 4 years, is this the last time the band's going to be together in Pittsburgh? You know, how many times have we said that, Jeff? It's unbelievable. Oh, and I watch Sidney Crosby, and I'm like, this guy is 36 years old. He does not seem to slow down from the last 3 or 4 years. He's just a tremendous player. And it's guys like him that I'm really enjoying watching. And partly because I live in St. Louis, but I watch Ryan O'Reilly. And, you know, I said to my son Bronson at the game on Sunday, I said, look at every time he's on the ice. It is full 200 feet, end-to-end, skating as hard as he can, working as hard as he can. And Bergeron, and you see Marchand elevating his game the last week or so. And just when everybody thought that Boston probably might not win a game in the playoffs because Carolina dominated the first two, you know, Bergeron and Marchand are like, no, we're still good. We're the Boston Bruins, you know, and now we got a best out of three. So, but the number one guy for me right now would be Sid the Kid. He's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to ask you about Brad Marchand as well. And listen, got right under the skin of Tony D'Angelo. And
did he ever.
He really did. I am curious, what's it like officiating a game that Brad Marchand is in?
See, Brad and I got along really well. Maybe he's a Nova Scotia boy. I'm a New Brunswick kid. I don't know. But I always liked him because I knew he was the type of player. He was always respectful to the officials. He never ever, you know, he may get mad in the heat of the moment, but always respectful. And I always looked at him like, hey, this is his role. This is the job that he has to do. But every team in the NHL would love to have Brad Marchand. And sure, does he get under the skin? Like, you know, I'm not surprised he got under D'Angelo's skin, and I don't think it takes much to get under his skin. But, you know, he's smart. He's been around a long time. He's a savvy veteran, and he knows what he's doing. And he knows that, you know what, I might be able to get this guy off his game, and he might make a mistake. But as far as Brad Marchand, you know, I posted something a while ago. People look at him as a villain if you're not a fan of the Bruins, but I've seen the charity work he's done. I've seen him gone over to Jimmy Hayes' wife's house and play with their kids, and he's just such a good person that, people don't know that side of him.
Real quick, I want to end on this one. We've got about a minute, Tim. I remember talking to Crosby at the NHL Players Tour a couple of years ago, and we're talking about his career, and I said, do you have any regrets at all? And he said, I have one. He said, how I talked to the officials early in my career. Does that surprise you?
Yes and no. I'm not surprised, but I'm a little surprised that he recognized that, and that just makes me love the guy that much more. Because I remember early, like he alluded to earlier in his career.
Oh yeah,
he had run the show in the Quebec League. Think
yep.
about it, right? He's running the show. The officials, you know, he's getting the benefit of the calls all the time, probably because he's the face of the Quebec League at the time, and he came in and revitalized the Pittsburgh franchise, and maybe he was a little too cocky, like I was when I first came in the league. So, but it doesn't surprise me because I remember I worked my 1,000th game 4 or 5 years ago, and in the middle of the summer, package shows up at my house, and unsolicited, and I open it up, and it's a jersey from Sid. He had got his equipment guy to find my address. And to Tim, congrats on 1,000. Hope many more, blah, blah, blah. That's the type of person he is. He's just, there's a reason that he, you know, he's regarded as one of the all-time great players. And he, another guy that's just a tremendous person. So, no, I'm not surprised to hear that. That's great.
The Hall of Fame awaits for Sidney Crosby.
No kidding.
We're unfortunately out of time. Tim, always great catching up with you. Be well. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. I'm sure we'll check back soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. Thanks. Have a nice day.
There he is, Tim Peel, former NHL official, now hockey multimedia maven. You can see and hear Tim a lot of different places, radio, podcast, television, you name it. Peel's all over it. Thanks to Tim Peel for stopping by the program today. Thanks to Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet, Josh Getzoff, Penguins radio play-by-play voice, and of course, as always, on his lovely Tuesday afternoon walk with his wife today, the one and only Elliot Friedman. Thanks to Matt Marchese. Thanks, Lance Kennedy. Back tomorrow. Enjoy the games tonight, folks.